daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day for great questions. Why is it when the research, the polling, the exit polls, the deep down analysis of America shows that this is not a left-wing country? In fact, the Democratic Party isn't even a left-wing party. Not even close. As a matter of fact, according to the most recent Gallup poll, it was released over the weekend. The most recent Gallup poll shows a majority, yes, that's right, a majority of people who identify as Democrats call themselves either moderates or conservatives. So why are they battling it out between Bernie Sanders, socialist, and Elizabeth Warren, more socialist, even though she says she's not, and Joe Biden, who has remade himself as somebody who is woke and together with the far left? What's the strategy here? We'll talk about that with Bill O'Reilly later in the show. We'll also be speaking this hour with Bjorn Lomborg. Bjorn is one of the leading experts who is sane on climate change. And yes, the climate is changing. And sure, it would be nice if we could do something about it. What can actually be done about it without wrecking the economy and changing our world? We will find out. We'll also find out whether some of the alarmism is for real. And by the way, there's a report from Great Britain, a controversy, because when it came to counter terror and the danger of violent strikes against civilian and innocent targets, they included on a list, government list, that Extinction Rebellion, that radical climate change group. Is that appropriate? We'll speak to Bjorn Lomborg about that. And here in the United States, we are getting ready for the great big Democratic debate, the last one before the Iowa caucuses. It's just unbelievable. It's 20 days. And then people are going to be caucusing in frigid Iowa. Yeah, less than 3 weeks. They're debating tonight. And tonight, what they're debating over seems to me to show the utter stupidity of the politically correct wing of the Democratic Party. Because right now there's this huge controversy as to whether in December, not of 2019, in December of 2018, so a year and a month ago, okay, Bernie Sanders, in a private meeting with Elizabeth Warren, told her that he didn't think a woman could win the presidency. Okay, this is supposed to be the battle of the century. And by the way, this is a battle that will have a very clear winner. And the winner is probably Joe Biden. And probably also Donald Trump. I mean, this is unbelievable. This is like the leftists freaking out because Vince Vaughn, Hollywood star, shook hands with the president during the national championship football game, where my prediction was absolutely correct. The LSU Tigers won. I just said the Tigers would win. The Clemson Tigers lost. Congratulations to all the Louisiana folks. And by the way, the people down in New Orleans applauded lustily for the President Melania, who were there. And it's supposed to be some kind of a crime for Vince Vaughn to shake hands with the president. Does this remind you a little bit of, remember when Ellen DeGeneres was at a football game with former President Bush and she got criticized for being friendly to a former President Bush? This is insanity. But this is where the Democratic Party has wound up. Okay, there unfortunately is no tape, I don't think, unless somebody was bugging their private conversation. But let me go back to this conversation, which is supposed to be so central and will obviously be a very big focus of the debate tonight, because one of these two people is lying. Yeah, that's correct. It has to be. This is the way it's covered in the New York Times. The headline Warren says Sanders told her a woman could not win the presidency. Oh, no! Oh, my goodness, how could he say such a thing? By the way, is there somebody out there who actually agrees that it would be an unbelievable outrage? It would take Bernie out of the race if he actually did say that, that he thought a woman would have a tough time winning the presidency? I think he's wrong, by the way. I think there are women who could and probably will win the presidency very easily. One of them is a former governor of South Carolina. Her name is Nikki Haley. But Elizabeth Warren has a lot of other problems. In any event, Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts said last night, in the middle of the night, that Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont told her in December 2018 that he did not think a woman could win the presidency. We're supposed to hear shrieks and horrors and people fainting everywhere because this is so incredibly consequential. Mr. Warren's description of the comment from a private one-on-one meeting represents a remarkable salvo at her leading liberal rival in the 2020 race just 3 weeks before the Iowa caucuses. Okay, you can say all kinds of nasty things about people. You can say they're crazy. You can say they're immoral. But my God, if she's actually saying he said a woman can't win the presidency. Yeah, that's just too much. With the two Democrats set to face off tonight in their next televised debate, they now found themselves in the most tense standoff of the Democratic nomination fight. Can you feel the tension? Can you feel it? This is really, it's tension city in here. Yeah, this is like the rumble in the jungle. Ali versus Fraser. Remember that? By the way, the rumble in the jungle, today you would say rainforest, right? Because you're not supposed to say jungle. In any event, yeah, I don't know if you remember the Tension City remark, but in 1988, way back then, when Vice President Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, God rest his soul, was running for the presidency. He had a confrontation with Dan Rather, where Vice President Bush did really very well against obnoxious questioning and sort of a ambush questioning. And afterward, he said, it was Tension City in there. Okay, and it's going to be Tension City tonight at Drake University in Iowa, in Des Moines, where the two Democrats set to face off tonight. In their next televised debate, they now find themselves in the most tense standoff of the Democratic nomination fight. Mr. Sanders insisting he did not make the explosive remark. Okay, why is this an explosive remark? It's a matter of opinion. I think Bernie's wrong. Can someone explain to me why it's explosive to say you think a woman would have a tough time beating Donald Trump? Mr. Sanders insisting he did not make the explosive remark, which risks alienating many Democrats. And Ms. Warren saying on the record that he did make the comment. Okay, here's what happened. There were members of Elizabeth Warren's staff who attacked Bernie because of reports that his staff was using scripts that said that Elizabeth Warren was an elitist. And she couldn't win voters against Trump that Bernie could win. Now, that's also an argument. Okay, but they were so outraged by the fact that some of his campaign aides, his volunteers, were going out there in New Hampshire telling people, well, you know, Elizabeth Warren is an elitist. She appeals to people who are highly educated and other people who like the idea of a Harvard law professor, which she is. Oh, she was so offended by that, that her campaign aides came back and said, well, you know, that Bernie, before Elizabeth began the campaign, told her a woman couldn't win. Bernie immediately denied it, said, I never said such a thing. Bernie said that he said that Trump would attack her and try to use every weapon he had, including attacking her as a woman. But he said he never said it. He didn't think a woman could win. And he said, whoever said that I said that is lying. They're lying. They're lying. I'm telling you, they're lying. Okay, that's Bernie's statement. After he made his statement, Elizabeth Warren came out with this statement. It's a formal written statement that she released last night. She said, Mr. Sanders made the remark at a two-hour meeting in December 2018 where they discussed the 2020 election and our past work together and our shared goals, in particular defeating President Trump. Quote, among the topics that came up was what would happen if Democrats nominated a female candidate. I thought a woman could win. He disagreed, she said. I have no interest in discussing this private meeting any further because Bernie and I have far more in common than our differences on punditry. She added that she and Mr. Sanders were friends and allies and said she believed they would continue to work together to beat Trump. Okay, they got a problem right here. But you have audio of Bernie or of Liz? Okay, great. Let us go to Warren. This is her reaction, which sort of began this back and forth. They had a non-aggression pact before where they weren't going to attack each other because they're both progressives. They're both from New England. They're both going for that same fringe of the Democratic Party. But here is Elizabeth Warren with one of her shots at Bernie.
You know, I was disappointed to hear that Bernie is sending his volunteers out to trash me. Bernie knows me and has known me for a long time. He knows who I am, where I come from, what I have worked on and fought for, and the coalition and grassroots movement we're trying to build.
Here is the horrible script that she considers trashing her. And it's so mild. It's so the sensitivity. These two people are acting like snowflakes. Really, this is a copy of the script that she's complaining about that was obtained by Politico. Quote, the people who support Senator Warren are highly educated, more affluent people who are going to show up and vote Democratic no matter what. She's bringing no new bases into the Democratic Party. Responding to the leaked script, Ms. Warren said that Mr. Sanders had been sending his volunteers out to trash me, as you just heard. Mr. Sanders said that he had never personally attacked Ms. Warren and that both campaigns had hundreds of employees who sometimes say things that they shouldn't. Okay, what is so terrible about saying that she appeals to a different segment of the electorate than Bernie Sanders? This is a cancel culture. How do you describe this? Hypersensitivity? Craziness? Okay, Ms. Warren's advisors insisted that she had no intention of making the private meeting a public spectacle. Well, she already has. However, after Mr. Sanders' team forcefully denied the report, some advisors said they believed she had no choice but to offer her account firsthand. Mr. Sanders, in his statement, which was released earlier on Monday, said it was ludicrous to think that he would have made such a comment. It's sad that 3 weeks before the Iowa caucus, and a year after that private conversation, staff who weren't in the room are lying about what happened, Mr. Sanders said. Do I believe a woman can win in 2020? Of course I do. After all, Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump by 3 million votes in 2016. Mr. Sanders added that he had told Ms. Warren that Donald Trump is a sexist, a racist, and a liar who would weaponize whatever he could. The people familiar with that 2018 meeting, who were briefed on it shortly after it took place but were not authorized to speak publicly, said Mr. Sanders offered the comment while giving his assessment of the upcoming race. In relaying to Ms. Warren the challenges he thought her campaign would face, he said not only that President Trump would weaponize sexism, but also that such attacks would preclude a woman from being elected, according to the private accounts. Okay, people close to Mr. Sanders said he never said such a thing, that it would preclude a woman from winning. Now, this is not helpful to the Democratic Party, but of course it would be completely unthinkable that the people in the press pool tonight won't be leading with this question. In other words, it goes to a basic question of credibility and also of sanity. By the way, it questions where both Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator Bernie Sanders are going to fail. They have a bigger problem. And their problem is Joe Biden. And the way it's going to be arranged on the stage is Joe Biden's right in the center again because he's leading in all the national polls. And he will have Sanders on one side and Warren on the other. So when they're going at each other, Biden can sit back and smile and listen and say, hey, come on, come on. We're all Democrats here. We're all getting together. And yes, I think a woman can win. And I'm even planning to pick a woman to be my running mate. But I don't know. It says anything like that. And by the way, Biden needs to get a better answer on the attack that he will get from Bernie Sanders tonight about his vote on the Iraq war. Biden supported President Bush in the original invasion of Iraq. And that's not a popular position right now with Democrats. But he could actually handle that much better than he has, where he's saying, well, I was just lied to by the Bush administration. He actually worked pretty closely with the Bush administration on trying to make sure that that war didn't turn out to be a total disaster. And there are things that Joe Biden can say. We will get to that as well. There's also clearly going to be discussion about climate change because that is such a hysterical issue right now with Joaquin Phoenix, a front runner for winning the Best Actor Oscar for the revolting film Joker. With all of that going on, yes, there will be discussion about climate change. Will any of it be realistic or appropriate? And what about this? A new attack on President Trump? And this is hilarious, and it actually relates very directly to the Democrats and their debate. In USA Today, there is a new editorial. The headline for it says, White Male Trump Team Needs Diversity. America's image and security are at stake. And Kate Brennan begins, when President Donald Trump strode to the podium last week to tell America what would happen next in Iran, he clearly wanted to project his vision of American strength. He stood among top members of his national security team, including the Joint Chiefs of Staff and other military officers, all men, all white. Okay, is that where what we've come to now? Is that when it comes to national security, our military leadership, we actually need to make sure there is affirmative action, that we pick a more diverse look? By the way, what about the Democrats? There's actually an editorial cartoon in that same USA Today, right above this editorial attacking Trump. And it has a caricature that says the all-white Democratic debate. Well, they're forgetting, of course, Elizabeth Warren is Native American, as we all know. And then they show two black people looking askance. Democrats claim they're standing up for diversity. They got the standing up part right, says the other commentator. What are the Democrats supposed to do on this issue of diversity? And this goes to the whole charge that poor Meghan Markle, the Duchess of Sussex, who is, as everybody knows, moving to Canada, that she is a horrible victim of horrible, horrible, cruel racism. Question is, how exactly? A false cries of racism are as foolish as ignoring real cries of racism when they're appropriate. We'll also talk about alarmism and realism in dealing with the so-called climate crisis. Speaking to Bjorn Lomborg, coming up on The Medved Show.
I'm, of course, deeply honored to receive
The Michael Medved Show.
Michael Medved Show, one of the things that I enjoy so much about speaking to Bjorn Lomborg about climate change is unique among people who are expert on these issues, and he has been writing and studying and consolidating research on these issues for a very long time. Bjarne really has a balanced approach. And first of all, just to illustrate that, you should take a look at his new column. It's called Empty Gestures on Climate Change. And it's posted up at our website at michaelmedved.com. So, Bjarne, am I right in assuming that you don't think that Jane Fonda and Joaquin Felix of Phoenix getting themselves arrested is actually going to save planet Earth from extinction?
Yes, you're definitely right about that. But honestly, I don't think they probably think that either. It's more a question of getting people to realize what will actually work and what certainly won't work. And unfortunately, a lot of people, and I'm sure Jane Fonda is one of them, are advocating a lot of things that sound good, but actually have incredibly small impacts. And if we're going to do something about global warming, which is a real problem, we should actually look at what are the things that can have a significant impact and won't cost the world.
Okay, so when you talk about those things, a lot of what you write about is committing more resources to research and development, which is not such a radical notion, is it?
No, but it's not very much fun. You don't want to chain yourself to a fence or something to achieve that. But the reality is, think about most of the problems that we've had over the last couple hundred years for humanity. Big problems. We've solved them not by telling people you have to do with less. That's a very unpopular argument, and it typically won't work. We have solved them through innovation. Look at back in the 50s and 60s when air pollution was a huge problem in Los Angeles. The simple sort of approach to that would be to say, nope, nobody can drive a car anymore. And of course, you couldn't get people on board for that. What did solve a very large part of the problem was the catalytic converter. Innovate a simple, effective tool to reduce emissions, and everybody goes along. Not everyone, and it did cost something, but it was a smart and simple idea. That's what we need for climate change as well.
What about the alarmism we keep hearing from Time Magazine's Person of the Year, Greta Thunberg? We keep hearing that we have 10 or maybe 12 years left before basically our civilization is destroyed. Do you sign on to that?
Well, again, this is not a question of belief. It's really a question asking, what do the experts tell us? And it's very, very true that a lot of people have sort of latched on to this idea, we only have 10 years left. Back in 2018, we had 12 years left. But that's an artifact of somebody asking a very specific question to the UN climate panel, what will it take to do something that's almost impossible? And then they came back and said, well, it'll take something almost impossible to do. You have to do all of this by 2030. The reality is, and remember, this is not me saying this, these are the best experts. So this is the Nobel laureate, the guy who got the Nobel Prize in economics for climate economics, the only one who's ever got it, Nordhaus. He's estimated, along with lots and lots of other experts in this field, what will be the total cost of global warming if we don't do anything? The answer is in the order of 3 to 4% of global GDP. If you calculate all the damages that you are going to see in the coming centuries, that's about the answer.
Okay, so you're not talking about hundreds of millions of people who are dying of thirst or incineration or anything like that.
And the crucial bit is to recognize this is the best estimate that we have. This is a problem, not the end of the world. Remember, all of the prognoses from the UN, pretty much everyone else, expect the world is going to be much, much richer by the end of the century. If they're not, we're not going to see much of the climate problem as people are talking about, because that only happens if Indians and Chinese and everybody else get very rich and start emitting a lot of CO2. So the idea here is by the end of the century, we'll have a much richer world, much better able to tackle most problems. Yes, sea levels, as you just alluded to, will also have risen. So we will have to build more dams and levees. But look, almost all countries in the world know how to do this. Holland is obviously famous for having, a large part of the country lives underwater. And the total cost of everything Holland has done so far is about $10 billion. That's their own estimates.
That's over the years? That's over 300, 400 years?
That's over the years. And remember, back early part, it was much cheaper because people didn't cost all that much, but it was obviously a much bigger part of their economy. But it shows you the total impact is very, very cheap. We estimate almost everyone can safeguard everything from sea level rise for less than 0.1% of GDP.
Okay, so do you think there are any cities, like people say Miami would be the first to go, it will be totally underwater? I've heard experts saying in 5 years, that's very unlikely, right?
That's just ridiculous if you think about what a sensible policy would be. If you let Miami go, you're probably going to lose, I think it's $40 trillion or something, the net worth of the values of all the buildings in Miami. And you could probably safeguard them for, in the order of $5, $10, $15 billion over the next 20, 40 years. Of course you're going to do that. Now, I have no doubt that local politicians are going to drag their heels. You're not going to do it effectively. You're going to get tagged on lots of projects you don't need, so we're going to pay too much for it. All this kind of stuff. But of course you're going to pay billions to save trillions.
By the way, you'll notice CNN was reporting last week, the very end of last week, that one of the most beautiful spots in North America, Glacier National Park, which is actually a binational national park, it's also Waterton National Park over on the Canadian side, they had posted signs all over saying, take a good look at our beautiful glaciers. They will be all gone by 2020. In 2017, the park was told by the agency that the complete melting off the glaciers was no longer expected to take place so quickly. However, it hasn't taken place. So they've removed the signs. Something else they could do to save the glaciers in the national park?
Well, glaciers are going to recede, and no, there's probably nothing they can do. There are people who make these very fancy ideas, but no, the world in 2100 is going to be a different world, and in some ways, it's going to be a poor world. I would like to have a lot of glaciers, but remember, that's because I don't live near one. most people, certainly in Switzerland, worry immensely in the century before last, or in the 1800s. When glaciers were expanding because of the ice age, that was dramatically destroying buildings and many other things. So, most of these things, and we don't get this from the sensible conversation that we should have on climate change, most things have upsides and downsides. Overall, global warming will have more downsides than upsides. That's why it's a problem. But, you keep hearing about more heat deaths, but you fail to hear about the fact that there'll be many fewer cold deaths, and almost everywhere around the world, cold deaths outweigh heat deaths dramatically. And so again, we need to get a sense of proportion.
The numbers that people have come up with, the number of total deaths from climate occurrences is dramatically less, and partially because we're so much better at rescuing and healing people. Speaking to Bjørn Lomborg, he is a president of the Copenhagen Consensus Center and visiting professor at the Copenhagen Business School. The Copenhagen Consensus Center is a think tank researching the smartest ways to cope with climate change issues. We'll be right back on The Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, there are all kinds of comments that are out there, some of them rather appalling, about the upcoming impeachment trial. And yes, Nancy Pelosi has finally relented. She has basically given up her idea of holding herself hostage and threatening to blow her own brains out, as people have described her strategy, and has given in. They are sending the articles of impeachment up to Mitch McConnell. He has announced that the impeachment trial is going to begin 1 week from today. So it's going to overlap very directly with the Iowa caucuses, which is not necessarily good news for the two Democratic front runners. Actually, you can even say three, because Amy Klobuchar has just lost, I think, any real chance of being able to ignite some kind of prairie fire that would help her compete in Iowa. She's running fifth right now. But both Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are sitting U.S. senators, and they're going to have to be back there for the impeachment trial. Now, Bernie says he's going to take private planes at night when they're done with the impeachment trial and go out and do rallies. It's going to be very tough. And one of the things that I know a number of people thought about, well, why doesn't Bernie, Bernie's sort of toward the tail end of a career, why doesn't he just resign from the Senate? There's an obvious answer. The governor of Vermont is Republican. His name is Phil Scott. And he's not going to appoint another socialist to fill Bernie's seat if Bernie resigned. The reason I mentioned Bernie resigning from the Senate, Bob Dole did that. When Bob Dole locked up the Republican nomination for president of the United States in 1996, he resigned after a very distinguished Senate career because he wanted to give all his attention to the presidency and he didn't want to sort of cover his bets. But Bernie not only would probably not welcome the idea of resigning, he can't realistically resign and give the Republicans another seat in the Senate, even temporarily, certainly not in the midst of an impeachment trial. Let me go to Jeff in Seattle. Jeff, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hello, Michael. I appreciate you taking the call.
You bet.
I've been a civil engineer since graduated from the University of Washington back in the 80s. And early on in my engineering career, I was a lead designer for a large flood control project out at Grays Harbor. It was about a $30 million congressionally authorized project that I redesigned, and we ended up building it back in 95, 96 for $11 million. And
is this in Aberdeen or just Grays Harbor
South
generally?
Aberdeen, yeah. South of the Chehalis River.
Right, go ahead.
We included 1 foot of allowance for sea level rise. That also was allowance for the levee settling before they'd have to add more material to it, you know, as they kept the project going over the decades. And the design life of a project like that is at least 100 years. So we built a project with allowing for a foot of sea level rise concurrently with Al Gore saying we could see 20 feet of sea level rise within the next in the near future, is what he used to say. So I've been skeptic for going.
Okay, so wait, you allowed for a 1 foot. How much has the sea level risen since you built in that extra 1 foot?
Well, there's a tide gauge. The nearest tide gauge to Grays Harbor is in Astoria, Oregon, and the sea level rise there is something like a tenth of a millimeter per year. It's much lower than most of the places along the coastline, probably because for some reason there's some tectonic activity in the land.
Can you explain to the audience how much a tenth of a millimeter is in inches?
It ends up being, well, see, in Seattle, the sea level is rising. Relative sea level is a little over 2 millimeters per year, and that worked out to 8 inches. So it'd be like a quarter of an inch in a century.
A quarter of an inch in a century. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And this is supposed to annihilate our big cities?
Right. Well,
okay, now the reason I'm joking about this and teasing about it, because you're actually an engineer who has designed these projects. And before they spend, I mean, I imagine this project you're describing in Grays Harbor County, that project was fairly expensive.
Well, they expected it to cost $28.2 million. That included a bunch of big pump stations and tons of riprap that I convinced the project manager weren't necessary. So we ended up building it for less than 40% of what was authorized.
Oh, good. Well, congratulations to you. Look, I appreciate your perspective. And I think people do need to hear this. And thank you for your contribution to balance and sanity on this particular issue. I appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks for calling. Okay, there's a piece, and it's actually a fairly alarming piece for those of us who really dread the prospect of President Bernie Sanders. But it's a piece by Brett Stevens, who it's entitled in the New York Times, "Of Course Bernie Can Win." Now, he absolutely thinks Bernie would be a disaster, as I think anyone looking at this seriously does. But why does he think Bernie can win? because he was one of those people. I was another one, by the way, I will admit it, who thought there's no way that Trump can ever win. Trump is a sure loser. If Trump gets the nomination, he can't possibly win. Trump's too far out of the mainstream. He's too this, he's too that. Well, he won. And he won basically by winning three states that Republicans had lost six elections in a row for 24 years. He turned them around. Okay, here's what Bret Stephens says about Bernie and Trump. He says Trump won because he was willing to say loudly what his supporters believed deeply, because in his disdain for what politicians are supposed to be and to do, he exuded authenticity, because he was hated by the people his base found hateful, because he had an opponent who, in the minds of his supporters, epitomized corruption and self-dealing, and because he offered radical cures for a country he diagnosed as desperately ill. Despite being the oldest man ever elected president, he seemed to his voters fresh, true, bold, and sorely needed. So it is and would be with Sanders, writes Bret Stephens. Depth of conviction? Check. Contempt for conventional norms? Check. Opposed by all the right people? Check. Running against a crooked opponent? Check. Commitment to drastic change? Check. Like Trump, too, he isn't so much campaigning for office as he is leading a movement. People who join movements aren't persuaded. They're converted. Their depth of belief is motivating and infectious. The strength of Sanders' movement, writes Bret Stephens of the New York Times, is reflected in his blowout fundraising numbers, nearly $100 million for 2019, which only rose in the wake of his heart attack. If Sanders wins Iowa, where polls have him in a dead heat for first, and New Hampshire, where he has a slight lead, then the argument about his supposed non-electability will begin to crumble, including among older black voters who have so far been among Joe Biden's most important pillars of support. Intensity among Democratic-leaning voters will never be greater. There will likely be no third-party challenger like Ralph Nader to shave his margin, or an influential Never Sanders wing among liberal pundits. He will find crossover support from former Trump voters in places like Ohio and Michigan, just as Trump found that support from former Obama voters. To energize African-American support, he could choose Eric Holder or Stacey Abrams as his running mate. Okay, this is scary, and Bret Stephens acknowledges it. He says, I write as this as someone who thinks a Sanders presidency would be ruinous on many levels, by turning the Democratic Party into a socialist party, by turning the American economy into a statist one, and by turning America's position in the world into a feeble one. I'd hate to see him win the nomination, just as I hated seeing Trump win it in 2016. But wishes aren't facts. To say Sanders is unelectable, Bret Stephens says, is indefensible. We'll get a better sense of that tonight when they are debating. We'll also talk about why is the Democratic Party, which is still represented very well in the party by conservatives and moderates, drifting so far to the left. We'll be talking about that with Bill O'Reilly and more in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.